You are listening to Roll the Quadcast, a Blogger So Dear podcast where little old Charlie Brown is still trying to kick that football. Blogger So Dear is the go-to website for the best independent analysis of Wake Forest athletics.
Welcome to episode 17 of Roll the Quadcast. I'm Rob Reinhardt, joined as always by my wonderful co-host, Riley Johnston. It has been a fantastic week to be a Wake Forest Demon Deacon fan. Riley, how's your week been going?
It's been going really well, aided by a good Virginia Tech road win. Oh, good road win, I should say. And then
First in two years in a day.
Yep. And then yesterday was a nice win over Notre Dame, held serve at home. Got down late and then scored on the final six possessions when it counted. And Cody came up big. The entire team played well.
They like testing our heart down there at the end of these final games between the Notre Dame and the state game, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't have any hard facts to back this up. It's got to be the first time in a while that we've won two games in a week, because we haven't won a road game in 2 years. So I would assume it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, this was the first time, and this is not a criticism of Jeff Bozdelic. I'm just stating the facts. It's the first time we've won three or four ACC games under Jeff Bozdelic's tenure, and the best we've done was 1-2 of 3 with wins over Georgia Tech and BC, and that was 2 years ago. So again, that's not a criticism. That's just a factual statement and a fact that we sort of struggled there against Virginia and Pittsburgh and Clemson as of late, although we played better against Clemson. But it's been a good week to be a Wake Forest fan, and let's talk about that Virginia Tech, that road win on Wednesday night. And you and I last week had a discussion about Travis McKay and how he hadn't been playing that well. And I believe he had 15 points and 10 rebounds or something over the course of four games, which is well below. I mean, that's about his average for one game, let alone four games. But boy, did he bring it on Wednesday night.
Yeah, he did, and I kind of, everything I said on last Sunday was pretty much proven wrong. Well, I like to look at it as I lit a fire under the guys.
Absolutely. Master motivator, yeah. Riley Anderson Johnson.
You know, I kind of went in on Travis McKay, but he did a fantastic job against Notre Dame and Virginia Tech, especially Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Hit 5 out of 6 threes. I think those 5 threes were a career high for him. Hustled all over the place with on the ground.
Offensive rating of 201, I'm
seeing. Yeah, that's what we refer to as a small sample size, but that's outstanding. More than anything, he was confident. He showed up, and in the coach's show, he said that, he realized you can't just stand in the corner and have things come to you. You know, he settled down a little bit. He said he had just 4 bad games, and, he kind of manned up, and he took it to Virginia Tech, and he played really well against Notre Dame yesterday, hitting free throws down the stretch to close out.
And those threes to not necessarily start the game, but pretty early on in the game definitely got us going. I believe we were down 4-0. He hit a 3, so, that gets – we can say what we want about momentum, but it definitely gets the confidence going and the fans involved in the game. And briefly, before we continue talking about Virginia Tech, I did think the fans were very good yesterday at the Notre Dame game. And back to that Virginia Tech game, Cody Miller-McIntyre with 20 points, 10 assists.
First Demon Deacon since Chris Paul in 2004 to do that.
And actually, to take that a step further, according to the Wake Forest Tie-Dye Nation Twitter account, the first Deacon to do that in an ACC game since Randolph Childress in 93 or 94, I believe.
Wow.
It was since Chris Paul evidently did that against Texas. So I guess it doesn't count, but still very impressive either way. So what did he have, 9 assists in the first half?
Yeah, 9 assists. And a lot of that, I think kind of breaking it down a little farther, that shows how good he can be when guys are making shots. And you can kind of say that about any team in the country. But, he's very good at driving and dishing out. And, Wednesday night was a perfect example of that. Miles hit threes. Travis hit threes. Cav hit a couple of threes. I mean, those were really big three-pointers, especially in the first half there. Went 9 out of 16 for, I think, just over 56%. I mean, that's outstanding work, and we can kind of talk about this a little later, but he finished with 20 points and 10 assists, and kind of coupling that with the Notre Dame game, I'd really like to see him be a little more aggressive earlier on, because he shows what he can do later in game situation. But, you know, if he can pass early like he did against Virginia Tech and then score like he did in the second half of the Notre Dame and the Virginia Tech game, then I think he could be an outstanding player for us moving forward, and he's already a very good player for us.
Yeah, and I hate to compare him to LeBron James, and I'm not comparing him to LeBron James in the sense of his basketball ability, but, you know, for those who don't know, I'm a huge LeBron homer, fanboy, whatever, so criticize me all you want. But LeBron sort of plays the same way in that he definitely looks to distribute and get his teammates involved early on in the game, and then in the fourth quarter, and in this case late in the second half, is when Cody Miller-McIntyre really looks to step up. And
absolutely.
You know, he didn't need to step up late as much against Virginia Tech, obviously, because we had that game pretty much well in hand. But when we talk about the Notre Dame game later, I mean, big drives to the basket, big free throws. He was just clutch in that game, and he was, you know, he rose to the occasion, and that's the kind of player he seems to be. And you know, the NC State game earlier where, you know, they double-teamed Devin Thomas 85 feet from the basket, but that's their own decision for NC State. But, you know, a great drive by Cody Miller-McIntyre. So, I mean, this is a guy who's not afraid of the moment, certainly.
No, that's a brilliant pull-up jumper yesterday. I mean, with, mm-hmm. I think just under a minute left.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes some stones to take that shot, and, I mean, he drained it. So
to him, tie ball game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think a lot of that, I think he's done very well under the tutelage of Randolph Childress. I think that that's been a great, you know, we might not have the best coaching staff in the world, but, I mean, I think that all of them have their high points there. And, you know, I think Childress has really excelled in teaching and, you know, learning how to work with
him. Being a great mentor.
Absolutely.
I mean, at the very least, I mean, we can't speak to everything that Coach Childress has done for Wake Forest as a coach. We can certainly speak to plenty of things he's done as a player.
Yes.
Multiple ACC championships, but you know, as a mentor, he's been doing a great job with Cody Miller-McIntyre, and you would know far more about Randolph Childress than I would, being you're a lifelong Demon Deacon fan. But I mean, Cody sort of, he's getting this, you know, Mariano Rivera closer mentality of just
very well. I'm excited to see where he goes in the next couple of years, because once he steps up and kind of takes over the game, he's fantastic, and you kind of like to see that. You know, it's not a negative, it's just kind of constructive criticism, if you will. You know, he makes it look so easy at the end of the game.
Why can't he do it for all 40 minutes?
Right,
yeah.
And I mean, you know, not even all 40, just maybe 20. And
just when he's in there, yeah, but...
Right, and, you know, another thing I really liked from Wednesday night's game was Washington and Miles, but really stepped up.
Points.
And they kind of proved me wrong, too, because I said, you know, it's obvious
short,
that we should
shrink
short
the bench.
Bench,
yeah.
But, you know, they really excelled. Andre Washington showed a ton in his, I think he played about 15 minutes against Virginia Tech, had 8 points, 3 blocks, only 1 rebound, but, you know, the backups really know how to exploit the zone defense. I mean, him and Moto were both flashing. They know where to be, and I mean, that is the sign of a well coached team. When the backups know where to go on the court, especially they were pretty much clinically breaking down the Virginia Tech zone offense defense in the first half.
Absolutely, and sort of a point you and I have talked about off air with regards to the bench, and you know, sort of the enthusiasm that they show. And you know, some people criticize and say, "Oh, they're too over the top, they're too this, too that." You know what? To me, and I believe you agree with me here, that
Absolutely.
Shows they're involved in the game, both in terms of rooting on their teammates, cheering their teammates, but also being involved in the game of knowing what's going on, knowing we're running what kind of defense,
right.
Knowing what we're looking to do on offense, knowing time and score of the basketball game, which is critically important, so that when they step in, they're right there in the flow of things. And,
yeah,
and I think that's great.
And going off of that, you know, when you get what – 5, 7, 10, 15 minutes a game, you better make it count when you get in there.
Yeah.
And the only way to make it count is by having a very good idea of what's going on when you get into the game. And I think Miles Overton, Aaron Rountree, and Andre Washington, I mean,
and Moto.
Yeah, I mean, Moto is more along the line. I mean,
he plays extent more minutes than
right,
that.
Right, so, I mean, kind of looking at just Tree, Overton, Washington, Moto does fall on that, but he's kind of proven to be a little more than that. He's
yeah.
a role player as opposed to, you know, maybe a spot player.
Mm-hmm.
I think those three all do an excellent job of knowing what they need to do when they're in the game and really fulfilling the role that they need to fulfill. And, you know, if Dre can keep giving us minutes like he gave us against Notre Dame and Virginia Tech, impact, and I think he could be a very good player moving forward for us in minutes. You know, when Devin needs a break, and that's critical for a team that, you know, we'll talk about this later, kind of looking to NIT, maybe even higher aspirations after this week. So that's huge. So, you know, it was a nice win against Virginia Tech to get the monkey off the back. They did have two starters out.
But hey, we beat them.
And
it was closer than the score indicated. 6 point.
It was not as close as the score indicated.
Excuse me. Yes, it was not as close as the score indicated. 6 point game, but
when's a win?
I mean, that game was well in control from the outset. We outscored them by 14 in the first 10 minutes, and never really looked back from there.
Yeah, so it's a good win, and hopefully we can try to get another one on the road here. I think the games left we have are Duke, Maryland, Carolina, Miami, NC State. I mean, those aren't easy games. So it's going to be tough moving forward. But, I mean, I think we're growing confidence in the road and in our own play. So hopefully that translates to the road. But, you know, we got another big win yesterday against Notre Dame.
Yes, we did.
A little closer than we'd probably like. We led most of the way, especially got up 8, maybe 9 in the second half a couple of times. Then Notre Dame came back, took the lead 54-53, but we closed it out. What are your thoughts on overall for the game yesterday?
You know, my thoughts were that was a great win for us, obviously, and obviously another game where we closed and we sealed the deal, much like that NC State game.
Yeah.
We talked about Cody Miller-McIntyre earlier on about how exceptional he was down the stretch there. Give a lot of credit to Travis McKay for making some big free throws down the stretch. Along
at 14
with,
points.
To follow up that Virginia Tech performance along with Cody's performance late in the game, but all the credit in the world to Devin Thomas. 10 for 11 from the field for 21 points.
He tied the Wake Forest record, going 10 for 10. I tied Kyle Visser for the most shot made without a miss, and then he has to take the 11, but I mean, and I think he was quoted after the game as saying, they said, you went 10 for 11, he said, oh, I missed one? I think he forgot that he missed the last one.
Well, to be fair, I thought he got fouled on that one.
Yeah, there were a ton, on an aside, Devin Thomas and Cav, I thought, got hammered yesterday at points where they weren't calling it.
Yeah, but, to the officials' credit, I mean, it was sort of entertaining to watch in that there were only but so many fouls called.
Yeah, there were 28 fouls called. I mean, we've seen 56 against State.
I mean, we've seen 56 against State. Now, we talked about that Kentucky-Arkansas game briefly last week where there were more than 50-some fouls in that game. It's just, you know, the games are going 2 hours and 45 minutes and things of that nature. So, I mean, it was a pretty quick game and a pretty free-flowing game with limited turnover. So it was actually a pretty good game to watch.
I thought it was a pretty evenly matched up game.
Yeah.
That Garrett Sherman-Devin Thomas matchup was fun to watch all day. Maybe not for defensive purists, but I mean, I thought they weren't all easy shots. You know,
no.
I thought Devin and Garrett both played each other very well. They faced up well, but there were a lot of good passing to the post, a lot of good spin moves,
and
a lot of
shots.
Soft touches with left and right hand. So, you know, it's fun watching Devin compete against players of that caliber. And, you know, yesterday he more than held his own, had 21 points on 11 shots, 6 rebounds, an assist, and a couple of blocks. I mean, beyond that, doesn't show up in the stat sheet. He was on the floor nonstop yesterday. Now, for Virginia Tech, he was on the floor for multiple reasons that we don't want to discuss in terms of, you know,
not getting
down,
back as, not, as much. But
right, but I mean, yesterday he would, I think, a couple of plays, he actually dove twice for the same ball.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And a couple of those times, you know, sort of like fumbles in football, it's primarily luck with who recovers.
Yeah, and I don't think he actually was rewarded.
Effort was not the reason he did not get those loose basketballs, for sure. I mean, he was diving for the ball. He was, again, second efforts. I mean, unbelievable effort yesterday.
Yeah, and, you know, beyond that, you know, Devin Thomas, Travis McKay, Karan hit a 3-3, got kind of back on track after a subpar performance against Virginia Tech. Cavan Moto continue kind of doing what they're doing. Combined for 9 points and 13 rebounds, 3 assists. I mean, you know, that's they're both kind of fulfilling their roles there. Cav continued. I don't know if we discussed this before on the podcast.
I don't know, but we've definitely talked about it all the podcast.
He had ridiculous luck in picking up fouls, and, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't really noticed it.
Luck in the worst way.
Yes, in the worst way. Twice yesterday, the first one I think you were – I'm not sure you were there when that came in. I mean, straight up, the guy jumped into him, and I mean, it, no way it should have been a foul. The second one, was, I think, what was the second one? He was moving.
Oh, he was moving. He got caught. It should have been a push off. If we're going to call anything, but somehow he got called for some block. I mean, it was the most ridiculous. It wasn't the most ridiculous call I've ever seen, but it was terrible.
Yeah, and last year, I think a lot of the quote-unquote bad calls against him, and, you know, he doesn't have the best lateral foot speed. I mean, that's just a fact.
He's not an elite athlete.
Right. I mean, he's usually where he needs to be, but I thought a lot of it last year was he was slow to spot. You know, maybe he doesn't look the part, so it looks awkward when he's defending. This year, I think he's been in great positioning a lot. It's just, he's not getting the calls, and, you know, hopefully that kind of starts to change, but it's got to be frustrating for a guy like that that's, you know, working hard, you're in the right spot, and, you know, you're not getting the calls. But I thought he battled hard and grabbed a lot of rebounds that we needed, especially in the first half. So.
Yeah, and there was that one possession, I believe it might have been the second half, I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I think it was,
you know, we thought he got fouled a couple times, but he just kept battling, grabbing offensive rebounds, grabbing his misses, and I believe he ended up with two free throws out of it,
two made free throws out of it.
He's a 75% free throw shooter, so would have liked to seen him potentially get a chance at an and one or, you know, call the foul early, but give him credit for battling.
And I think once he bolts up a little more, kind of moving into next year, and he becomes more comfortable playing in the post, he's going to be a force down low, because if you're 75-80% from the line, if he can start grabbing those balls that he's tipping and, you know, learn to finish a little stronger, I mean, he's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, and, you know, we saw it in the Triad Pro-Am Summer League. I mean, you can tell he's slimmed down, but he's also added more definition to his arms, and you could see him running in a more fluid motion. He's definitely more... has a better physique this year than he did last year, and you see that in these games this year. And he's still a sophomore, so he's only going to get stronger and a little bit quicker and faster in the post. And as you said, I mean, his shooting's only going to improve, or at the worst, stay where it is at a 75% foul shooter. So that is going to be a big asset for us moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't – another thing that I – take out of the Notre Dame game, kind of moving forward, looking at the Syracuse game, kind of sagging into it a little bit.
Okay.
It's that, I mean, our zone offense looked very, very good yesterday.
Yes.
And, you know, I think the backups do a good job of that, but also we're very patient with the shots. I can only count maybe two or three times that I thought we took an ill-advised shot early in the shot clock. We know what we're supposed to do with the ball, and, I mean, that is a sign of good coaching, as well as, you know, the substitution rotation minutes. Overton Washington and Tree got a lot of minutes against Virginia Tech. They combined for only 12 minutes yesterday against Notre Dame. So, you know, when it gets down to it, you know, I think Bozdelic has actually done a good job of shortening the bench when necessary. And I think substitutions, while one time were his – what I would say one of his biggest
downfalls.
I think he's done a good job since he kind of gotten to know the players a little better over the last couple of years of knowing when to put them in, when to sub them out. And I think he rides the hot hand a lot better than he used to, where it used to be a set, you know.
Oh, he made three threes, take them out.
Right. And I haven't seen a lot of that anymore. So
no.
Kudos to the coaching staff and Bozdelic for, you know, reading the players a little better. And I think overall we've seen a leap and bounds of improvement. And these two games will hopefully – you know, get us moving in the right direction. We got our 14th win.
More than Bozdelic has had in any of the previous three seasons.
Yes,
13 in each of the past 2 years.
Still got a month and a half left to play in college basketball.
Yeah,
so, I mean, as a Wake fan, we might not have liked the direction where we were headed the first 3 years,
but at least
you can't fault the effort or coaching, in my opinion, this year. And I think it's kind of funny how we change from week to week, but I think if we can continue to grow and develop, we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you look at yesterday being January 25th, obviously we got our 14th victory last year. As we said, we didn't get 14th victory at all, but we got our 13th victory not until March 10th, and we got our 12th victory on February 23rd, so well ahead of schedule this year. We can talk what we want about the non-conference schedule,
right.
But, you know, I don't believe we've been 4-3 at any point in the ACC during Bozdelic's tenure, so
we have not.
You know, the best we've been was 2-1. Well, we've been
we were 3-3 last year.
3 last year after that win against
State. Then we were
State.
3-7.
But then we were 3-7. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But, you know, speaking of moving forward, let's talk about that Syracuse team, number three according to KenPom in the nation, number two, I believe, nationally according to polls behind Arizona, 19-0. What's the blueprint? We know they play a lot of zone. What's sort of the blueprint to beat this team? Let's just talk about the game.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse, I think they're ranked second in the country. They're one of three undefeated teams along with Arizona and Wichita State. Their staple is their 2-3 zone defense, with very active, kind of a it's almost like a man at times because they're so aggressive.
They do make adjustments, and it's sort of like man-to-man defenses do throughout games.
Yeah, their length is very difficult to address. It's going to be a rough go of it for us. I think the players should be very, very excited. This is a huge game, and you know, it's kind of funny how turn the corner with these two road wins, get to 14-6, and all of a sudden you're staring down a game that, you know, if we could somehow figure out
in
a way.
In your building.
Yeah, and where we've won, I believe, 13 in a row, and we're undefeated this year. We win that game, and obviously we would have to beat Georgia Tech, just getting ahead of it. Yep. I mean, you know, you're looking at possibly being ranked, and you're moving into the bubble for the NCAA tournament, if not in.
Well, there's already discussions of us on the bubble. Of us on the bubble after the Carolina game and after the Notre Dame game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough game. C.J. Fair, probably one of the
best in the country.
Yeah, best in the country on up there. Tyler Ennis and Jeremy Grant. Ennis is going to probably get second in the Rookie of the Year award to Jabari Parker. I mean, they've got a ton of players, you know. DeJuan Coleman's out for the year for him, but they still got Roberson and other freshmen. Cooney, Christmas.
The list goes
on. Yeah, I mean,
five-star after four.
They've still got that Gabenji guy, too, that transferred from Duke. So, you know, anytime you get a recruit transferring from Duke, that's good. Just kind of looking at their offensive ratings. Everybody's saying Tyler Roberson is above 100, and then everybody else is above 110, except for C.J. Fair. I mean, they're a very efficient team, sixth in the country there.
Who has high usage rate, so that's the only thing bringing that
in. You know, they don't turn the ball over. They're 28th in turnover percentage. They grab a ton of offensive rebounds, 11th in the country.
They force a ton of turnovers.
Yeah.
They block shots.
They don't shoot a lot of three-pointers. The main thing is they're going to look to slow the game down, which is what they always do, because – you know, they're excellent in defense. They're excellent in offense efficiency, so they want to keep it low.
They just play their game.
Yeah. They seek different places to, you know, attack. And the main thing of my concern is, even though they don't take a lot of threes, you know, 23% of their points come off three-pointers. They shoot 35%. But, you know, we've given Virginia Tech and Notre Dame a ton of open threes.
We were fortunate, you know, back to the Notre Dame game briefly, we were fortunate that Notre Dame did not make as many shots as they usually do.
Right, and I think the big thing to watch here is turnovers. They force a ton of steals. They block a lot of shots. They force a ton of turnover.
And, you know, I track turnover rate, and our turnover rate has been on the decline throughout the year.
Yeah. As we saw in the Virginia game to start out, we kind of snowball where you get one, then you push it to try to fix it, and you get another one. Yeah. And the length of Syracuse is going to bother us. I think, you know, if we're going to win, we have to have pretty much everything click. But Trout, McKay, and Caron have to hit threes. We have to limit turnovers.
Along with Kavanaugh, I would say.
Yeah, you know, we like using Kavanaugh a lot in the first 4 minutes and then kind of going away from – I like that stretch it out, you know, at a start.
Hopefully you can hit one in the first four.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about turnovers and lack of experience against a defense like this. You know, 2-3, it's not really a matchup zone. It's just a – 2-3 that it's extremely
it's
long.
A havoc zone. Yeah.
So I mean, ideally, I think we have a chance to win this game, but the matchups don't look that good when you look at it, you know, individually and as a whole. So
I mean, what do you think, Rob? Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and we'll talk more about this later about what does it take to make the NCAA tournament. Your brother and both of our good friend Bart Johnston, your twin brother, asked, you know, what's it going to take to make the NCAA tournament? What's it require? And, you know, we seem to be in the consensus of it requires a win over Syracuse or Duke. And I see Duke as a much more beatable opponent.
They have struggled on the road.
In terms of, you know, they've struggled some on the road. You know, they lost to a Notre Dame team on the road. And they're not nearly as good on the defensive end as Syracuse is. Regardless of what type of defense they play, and Duke plays a tremendous amount of man-to-man defense. I believe they play 99% man defense, and Syracuse plays 94% zone defense. But it's certainly going to be tough.
Yeah, and, you know, we aren't as bad against the zone as people tend to think.
No.
Image-wise, we are. I think we've done very well the last couple of weeks against the zone. We know where to be. We know how to beat it. Syracuse is just kind of a different beast altogether. And, you know, nothing sticks out more than this stat, which most people probably don't even look at. Average possession length when Syracuse is on defense, they are first.
The longest
in the country at 20.3 seconds. To put that in perspective, our average possession length is 17.2 seconds. So, you know, a lot of teams are slow because they hold the ball a long time. And, I mean, their possession length is 258. But, I mean, the reason they're so slow tempo-wise is because teams can't get shots off against them.
Yep.
I mean, not just bad shots. They can't get them off. I mean,
yeah.
And that really limits transition shots. That limits everything. So, it's going to be tough.
Easy transition points are not easy to come by.
You know, they're obviously very.
And part of that's their low turnover rate.
Yeah, and they're very well coached. They don't turn the ball over. They are a legitimate title contender.
Oh,
and,
without question.
Could we beat them? I think we could. I think if we play as well as we can, we have a shot.
It has to be our best performance of the year.
I think turnovers are going to be problematic. I think at times we'll exploit the zone a little bit because we know where it needs to go, but I don't think we'll have sustained success over the course of the game. And I think we might let it get out a little out of hand early, and we get into a deficit where we're trying to fight back. I think we'll wind up keeping it within 8 or 10, but I don't see us necessarily winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And you look at sort of their game against Boston College a few weeks ago, and I think we're definitively better than Boston College. And in Boston, and this was a game at Boston College where Boston College was in quote-unquote control for the most part of the game. But Syracuse just went on a run there late in the final, you know, 10 minutes and just asserted their dominance, asserted their athleticism, their overall skill set, and right like that, they won by 10.
Right, and I think it'll be like the Miami game. I think we will have a chance, meaning that we'll be within a couple of possessions at the under 4 timeout, but I think that Syracuse will close it out when it matters, and they'll win by about 7.
The Miami football game?
No, the Syracuse-Miami basketball game.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, sorry. That was a terrible question on my part.
Syracuse and Miami, where they were close at the under 4.
Yeah,
I think
for sure. Another, 12-point victory.
Yeah,
okay.
And they killed them over the last 4.5 minutes, so I think it'll be kind of like that, where we have a chance. And, you know, we've done really well down the stretch, so maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think Syracuse will go ahead and take care of business, which will lead to a very big game against Georgia Tech. We need to split this next week.
Yeah, I agree. I think, unfortunately, that 13-game home winning streak, which you had discussed earlier, will unfortunately come to an end. I don't know the score, but, you know, maybe 70-60 or something like that, Syracuse. But let's say we beat Syracuse. Okay, let's go on the conditional that we beat Syracuse, which
if then statement, which
you and I both acknowledge is a long shot. I believe Ken Palm has us at about a 21% chance, so about a 1-5. Let's talk about that Georgia Tech game.
Right.
You know, how do we match up against Georgia Tech? We think we're going to beat Georgia Tech.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I watched that game against that they played against State today. They got up big, and they kind of squandered a lead against the Wolfpack. The matchup I'm most interested in seeing is Daniel Miller versus Devin Thomas. Daniel Miller is an outstanding player. He rebounds the ball very well.
Several of us on the BSD staff had him for a preseason Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah,
for sure.
He's at 119 in offensive rating. He's 215th in the country and 79th at 8% of block shot. He's also very good at rebounding, ranked top 300 in offense, top 150 in offensive rebound, or defensive top 150 in offensive. And it's been really fun to watch Devin kind of mature over the last year and a half, and I think this is going to be a great challenge for him. Overall, I think we stand a great chance. Robert Carter is out for the year. He second in the country at 31% of all defensive rebounds grabbed, but I think he tore his ACL.
Yeah, sophomore, huge recruit for them.
Yes, you know, they've got Trey Golden, Marcus Georges-Hunt, and Cam Holsey. Quint Stevens had a very good game today. He was actually out on the court at the expense of Cam Holsey at the end of the game, which I found interesting. But, you know, overall, Georgia Tech, I think they're somewhere around 130th in KenPom, but they're 11-9. They don't really have any big wins. They beat Illinois, they beat Notre Dame, they beat
Boston College
and Charlotte, and that's about it. I think we're expected to win by about 8 or 10 on KenPom, and I think we'll take care of business. you know, really whether or not we beat Syracuse. That's a big game.
That's an independent event.
Yeah, and if we can go 1-1 next week, that puts us at 15-7 heading into the meat of our schedule, and that's what I want to see. I think we match up very well against them.
And, you know, that's something we had talked about in that we wanted last week, looking at this upcoming stretch of two-week games, we had Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Syracuse, and Georgia Tech, and we wanted to go 3-4 in those games. And part of what we talked about was, well, we better beat Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, and Georgia Tech to go 3-4.
So we need one more to get there.
I mean, we've held course so far. We won in Blacksburg, and we held serve on our own home court against Notre Dame. So I would expect a victory against Georgia Tech.
Yeah, kind of going off the same, you know, Devin Thomas versus Daniel Miller. They get they're 33rd in the country in amount of two-pointers as an overall percentage of their points, with 58% of their points coming from inside the arc. We're 47 nationally defensively, where we yield 56% in the post. So that's where the game probably going to be won or lost. And, you know, offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding, we need Moto, Cavan, Devin really to step up in there. And I think they're turning the corner. I think they're going to take care of business. And I think we'll win this game, hopefully, fairly comfortably.
I would agree. Now, I had talked about that hypothetical that we do beat Syracuse. So let's say we beat Syracuse and we beat Georgia Tech.
So we'd be 16-6, 6-3 in the conference.
Now, do you think we will be ranked next week if we do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to think so. I mean, how many teams most of the year?
No team has beaten Syracuse so far.
Right, I mean, you know, Carolina State, Notre Dame, and Syracuse. Those are four pretty good wins. I know two or three of those teams are down, but, I mean, you can only beat who you play. And yeah, if we're 16-6, 6-3, I think we would be ranked. I think we deserve to be ranked, and I know that's kind of a weird thought from the majority of Wake Forest fans, but that's why Syracuse is an absolutely huge game. If we can somehow upset Syracuse, we put ourselves really squarely on the bubble and maybe inside that bubble. I mean, 6-3 would have us at probably fourth in the conference. Hitting a pretty rough stretch of games there, admittedly, but you know,
at that point in time,
I mean, I think we would be. We don't have any bad losses. I mean, I know people made fun of Jeff Bedelic for saying that, but when you look at it, it's true.
If you're talking about pure just winning or losing, not talking about the score of the game.
Yeah, we're about as middle of the road as you can.
I mean, my goodness, we've lost to Kansas, Tennessee, Xavier, Virginia, Pittsburgh, and Clemson.
They're all top 42 in Ken Palm.
Top 42 in Ken Palm, and five of those six are top 29, or top 30.
So beating Syracuse would give us our second win over top 50 teams. We're 1-6 currently against top 50 teams in the country. I mean, with a win over Syracuse and North Carolina, I know UNC's a little down.
But they'll probably go on a run here.
I mean, I agree. I mean, with that much talent,
you would hope. Maybe we wouldn't hope, but you would think.
I would hope for, I mean, since we've already beat them, we do have to play them again. If we win the two games next week, to answer your question, yeah, I think we'll be ranked, and I think we deserve to be ranked. What about you?
I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I thought Bart brought up a great point earlier on Twitter when he said it's our biggest game since the 2010 NCAA tournament when we played Kentucky.
It's been a while.
And you could argue that game, how important that game was, since I don't know what the point spread on that game was, but I imagine they were prohibitive favorites against us. That, you know, they had, I believe they set a record for first-round draft picks that year. I think they had five or six that year with Mr. Wall and my guy Boogie Cousins, but definitely since the Texas game two nights before. So either way, it's been nearly four calendar years since we've had a game this big, and certainly the biggest game under Jeff Bozdelic.
Yeah, and I mean, over the last 2 years, we're 23-5 at home. So, I mean, that's really good no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, I mean,
even when we're bad, we're usually pretty good at home.
Yeah.
So that's nice to see. And, I mean, without kind of doing the math, in 2012, I think you can kind of tack on another 8 or 9 wins. So, I mean, over the last 3 years, 2.5 years, regardless of how bad we've been, I think we're still 3 wins to every 1 loss. Now, a lot of that's aided by out-of-conference wins. But, I mean, you know, we're a tough team to beat at home. We always have been. It's a special place. I mean, just like every other home arena is, but especially the Joel. So I think it's going to be rocking Wednesday night. Hopefully the weather stays all right, and I think we're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I do think the Joel is a great environment, and it was great on Saturday, and certainly had better moments. But I mean, you can tell how much the fan base fan base cares about this basketball team and this program, and it's great to see.
Just one final thought on that. I mean, there was a noticeable buzz yesterday before the game. It was the first time in a while that, you know, the fan base was active, the students were there, everybody was into the game, and I think the Buzz made a good point yesterday after the game. I think the crowd was a big part of the win. You know, we got down, we loud on the free throw. Good. that's what we need to do. What good teams do.
I mean, our fans were great. Absolutely. We had talked about, you know, the tie game, Cody Miller, McIntyre stepping up late. And, you know, when Notre Dame tied it up with a little over a minute ago, our crowd picked them up.
Yeah.
And what impact this had, we don't know. But our crowd did their part. They picked them up. They were applauding. When Notre Dame had the ball, they were, you know, cheering against them.
Yeah.
I thought our crowd was in all the right places yesterday. But, you know, transitioning to something we haven't done in a little bit of time, but we're getting back on. We're getting back on that bandwagon. That's our Roll the Quadcast Twitter questions. You know, what was it? Hashtag Ask RTQ.
Yeah, and I just turned it into use the
just tweet at us.
Hashtag Roll the Quadcast.
Yeah, hashtag Roll the Quadcast. And Riley, where can they find you on Twitter?
It's at BSD _ RA Johnston. So that's not a common name, but
that's your name.
Look for fun things about Wake Forest basketball or football, and if you Google search it, it'll probably be me or somebody else.
and you know, for me, I'm at Robert _ Reinhardt, Reinhardt. And for me, look for Wake Forest related tweets or terrible jokes, something along those lines.
We do all those, some better than others.
Some better than others. But, you know, Sebastian Ivory had a question for us, and I believe it was a great question. He said, you know, with two wins this week, where do you think that Wake Forest ranks in the North Carolina Big Four, according to Ben Swain, hashtag Go Big Four,
right,
North Carolina basketball hierarchy currently?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that Duke is the best right now. They're at 16-4, 5-2. Let's just run it down. We're 16-4, 5-2 for Duke.
Wake, I'm willing to spot them first.
Right, Wake is 14-6, 4-3. UNC, well, let's go State next. State is 13-7, 3-4, and Carolina is 11-7, 1-4. So, kind of, I didn't realize State was 3-4 after that one. Really paying attention. But you know, Duke is clearly number one, and I think right now it's fair to say, well, maybe not fair, but I think it's fair to say that NC State is probably fourth.
I would agree.
I think UNC and Wake are really interchangeable. I think it's a 2A, 2B. Carolina definitely has more talent, but,
they
have the best wins and the worst losses. I think when it comes down to it, if you use like a mean average of wins and losses and it kind of comes out, we're probably about the same. Obviously, Carolina has higher potential, higher ceiling, but they also apparently have a lower floor, so it's kind of hard to. I would go Carolina's probably 2A, as you said earlier, and I think we're probably 2B. But, you know, it's kind of difficult to say since we did beat them already, but it was at home. So.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, I would definitely say Wake is playing better relative to their personal haul than Carolina is.
Debatable.
I mean, I guess that's not breaking news. Carolina with five or six McDonald's All-Americans.
Right.
I mean, 1-4.
Relative to talent, Wake is by far exceeding Carolina and State, and they might even be exceeding Duke. But between Wake and Carolina, Wake is exceeding based on the talent they have. But recruiting is a big part of college basketball.
For sure. I mean, you know, State with the big one today over Georgia Tech, although it did take them until overtime, and it was only a 2-point victory. But, hey,
it's a nice comeback.
Credit where credit's due. Home wins in a row.
And they get FSU on Wednesday to try to get to 4-4.
Yeah, so, you know, talent on that team, TJ Warren, very talented, obviously. So, but I would still say they're fourth. I would say Duke, clear one. Their offense is incredible. Their defense leaves a lot to be desired, but it's getting better. And
will be a fun game tomorrow. Again, they play Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh.
At
I don't
Pittsburgh,
expect them to
in
win.
In the zoo.
Yeah, I don't expect them to win.
Yeah, I mean, not that I support game. Well, I support whatever you want to spend your own personal money on. But
entrepreneur, capitalist.
Hey, if Pittsburgh is somehow an underdog, home dog in that game, or they're getting less than 3 points.
Yeah, they'll probably be a 3.5 or 4 if I had to guess.
I'm not going to say liquidate all your assets and run to Vegas or go to sportsbook.com. But do that.
State. I mean, Pittsburgh
Pittsburgh's a better team.
Yes, and they also they don't really lose at the Peterson Athletic Event Center.
No, they are. I mean, death, taxes, and Jamie Dixon.
And Wake Forest 20-plus road loss, which apparently isn't true.
Hey, all I know is 1-0 in the past one. That's all I
Hashtag
know.
Hashtag small sample size, Deke.
Small sample size, but hey, we're going streaking from the quad to the gymnasium.
Yeah.
So that's that one, and then you know,
kind of touched on Bart's already.
We kind of talked on Bart's earlier, but let's dive into it just a little bit more briefly and say, you know, what would it take for Wake to make the tournament?
Yeah, right now we're sitting at 14-6. I think
ACC.
Right, we need to beat Syracuse or Duke. We have to beat one of them, so that would get us to 15 wins. Florida State at home. Well, we need to go get 7 or 8 wins at home. So that's
Georgia Tech, Syracuse/Duke, or Duke.
Right, Boston College.
Boston College.
One out of Clemson and Florida State. So, and if we win out, I think we have
four.
But I mean, right. So that would get us at 7. That'd be 7-2 at home. And
yeah.
Meaning, so we need one more road win to get to 500 in the conference. And I think 500 in the conference gets us to 19-12. Gets us to 19 wins. 19 wins more
prior to the ACC tournament.
Right. 19 wins won't get us in the tournament with the schedule we played. So we need to get at least 2 on the road if we get 7 at home. If we get 7 at home, we have to get at least 3 on the road. We have to get to 10 conference wins because that gets us to 20 wins. And I think 21 is what's needed. If we get to 20 in the regular season, then I think we need to win an ACC game, so we'd play Thursday if we are at 20 wins. So we need at least 21 after the ACC tournament to have a chance.
Yeah, and it's
interesting. And one of them has to be a Duke.
And it's interesting. You look at the 2013 NCAA tournament and some of the at-large teams. You look at Minnesota, an 11 seed last year. They were 20-12. A Cal, they were 20-11. A Boise, a 13 seed, one of the play-in games, they were 21-10. And LaSalle, another 13 seed playing game. They played Boise. They were 21-9. So, no team with less than 20 wins. So I think you're 100% accurate there.
Yeah, and it's fun to kind of look ahead a little bit. It's not completely out of the. If we can beat the biggest problem, going to be beating Syracuse or Duke. I mean, we have 6 home games left. If we can get 4 out of those, that gets us to 18. Then we need 2 road games to get to 20. Could be stay on the road. Maryland's a possibility. Could be
Miami's a possibility.
Yeah, and I mean, Carolina's a possibility. You don't know what you're getting with them. The only
Miami won there.
Yeah, the only sure loss I'd say
better than
is at Duke. That's the only one under 10%. Every other game we have above 20%. So
yeah,
that means we have at least a fighting chance. So
yeah, winning at Duke's certainly not going to be easy.
So my answer is 21 after the ACC tournament at a minimum, and that has to include a Duke and or Syracuse victory. If we can get maybe 20 if we beat both Duke and Syracuse, because that gets us pretty much 2 marquee wins plus another one depending on how UNC turns out. So
yeah, I mean, we've talked about this off air briefly, but how Carolina finishes the year is critical to our success, and unfortunately for us, they already have 4 conference losses. So their ceiling is certainly limited for what they could accomplish. But if they can continue to win a lot of games, so we think they'll win a decent stretch of their game starting potentially today with Clemson.
Hopefully they'll start Wednesday.
We'll see what happens. But, that could be a win that pays more dividends for us later in the season.
Yep, I agree.
So
20, when you agree, 21 after the ACC tournament is pretty much a minimum.
Yeah, I'm with you. And so then, what we've talked about potentially what we could accomplish this year, and we've talked about Jeff Buzdelic, his tenure ad nauseum. What do you think it will take for Jeff Buzdelic to return next year? Not necessarily your personal opinion of what it should take, but what you think it just will take in reality.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's NCAA tournament or bust. I think that's what it's been from the beginning of the year. I think we have to make the tournament, and if we make the tournament, that gives them a chance of staying. But I will say, and I said this off air before we began, say we get to 20 wins, we make the NIT, maybe win a couple of games in there, then I think there is a legitimate case that could be built for Jeff Buzdelic staying. I think, in my personal opinion, is that we need to make the NCAA tournament and probably even win a game. But I think that it's definitely NCAA tournament or bust as far as Ron Wellman is concerned. He has 1 year left on his contract. You can't...
After this year.
Right. You can't extend... I mean, you have to...
You have
him.
To
you
make a decision
be,
one way or another.
Right. You can't,
you can't
have
a lame duck coach in college sports.
Exactly. And so, even though he doesn't have to have it this year, I mean, he pretty much has to be either extended or let go after this year. And I think the NCAA tournament is the only way that he's going to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know... You can make the case this is only his second true year, you know, with his recruits, his personal recruits. But it comes down to, you know, you need to do a better job with the 2011 recruiting class. That's, I don't want to say that's an unacceptable class, but it pretty much was. No offense to Chase Fisher or Anthony Fields. And Daniel Green, we saw some signs last year. We'll see what happens with him. We wish him the best with his recovery, of course.
Yeah, I'm guessing. At this point, we haven't discussed in a while. I can all signs point to him and McClinton redshirting again. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, and you know, McClinton's definitely an interesting piece moving forward, which I'm excited about. But 2012 class, he got his guys. Most of them are pretty good. We've seen definitely good flashes out of
all
of them.
Yeah, they're
going to
be good.
McClinton, we haven't seen him in the 2013 class. Miles Overton, we'll see what we can get out of the out of 2013. But, you know, I agree. It's got to be, to me, it has to be NCAA tournament or bust. That's the standard we've set here at Wake Forest.
Yeah, and I mean, it's 4 years. I mean... Where else, stepping outside the box,
okay.
Where else do you get 4 years to prove your worth? Now, I agree that college basketball, college sports in general, when you're bringing players in and you're extremely dependent on developing talent as you, to prove your worth at your job. But, I mean, 4 years is 4 years, and I think 4 years is a very good time frame, you know.
In college basketball, yes. I completely agree. I mean, if we're talking about college football, sure. I mean, you know, that's a sport much more dominated by juniors and seniors, even redshirt seniors, for that matter. But in college basketball, especially in the landscape today where you're looking at a world of one-and-dones, and I'm not saying, you know, there's a right or wrong way to do that, but you look at Kentucky winning the national championship.
It is what it is.
You know, in 2 years ago, with Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and all those guys going 1-2 in the draft, and you even look at Wake Forest, you look at Al Farouq Aminu and a five-star recruit in the 2008 class, played in the 2009-2010 season. Great force for both those years, won NBA lottery after 2 years. Jeff Teague, James Johnson, played 2 years for Wake Forest, both won the first round after those 2 years. Those three helped lead us to number one ranking in the country, and unfortunately, a very early exit in the 2009 NCAA tournament. But Farouq helped lead us to a first-round win against Texas in the 2010 tournament. So, I mean, this is you look at Jabari Parker at Duke, and obviously he's sort of the exception, but there are plenty of very talented players that can come in and have an immediate impact for you just based
right.
on the ability to recruit those players.
Yeah, and it boils down to we have to make the tournament this year. It's unacceptable at Wake Forest to not make the NCAA tournament for four straight years. And this is about as extreme a circumstance that you can get in terms of, you know, new coach coming in, literally
loses
80% of the players.
Loses Ish Smith, an NBA player, loses L.D. Williams, loses Chase McClellan.
And then he inherits, honestly, a class by all barometers that
was overrated by
you know whether
recruiting services,
right,
for sure.
Whether it be academics, personal character,
whatever,
or just
it was.
Pure basketball skills, many of those guys should never have been offered Wake Forest scholarships, in my opinion. That's obviously hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, I mean, Travis McKay, the only one remaining from that class.
Right. I mean,
he's certainly proven his worth. Carson DeRozier's been good for us in Spurs, and he's playing well at Providence.
Yeah.
Unfortunate he left, but, you know, Melvin Tabb averaging about 3 points per game for Kent State. JT Terrell, academic issues.
Ari Stewart came in with
CJ Harris. He was never but so great in the first place. I mean, he hits some big shots against Texas and Carolina.
3-point specialist.
Who can't shoot free throws,
right?
Or three-pointers. Yeah, that's But, you know, I agree with you completely. You know, this is a results-oriented business, as he said himself, and we need to see results. This is a program who had made postseason play 18 of the 20 seasons
it's
prior
a proud
to his,
program.
His arrival.
We got to get back there.
And he's 0-3. Hopefully he goes 1-4. You know, we certainly hope that, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and thanks to at WFU Jim, you know, at Sebastian Ivory and at MB_Johnston for submitting their questions. We really appreciate it. And, you know, if you ever want to tweet at us, go ahead and do that. Use hashtag AskRTQ, hashtag RollTheQuadcast. We'll find it. You tweet at us and we'll find it. We'll put it on air there. You know, we like communicating and talking and putting all these things on there. We're a small fan base. We like that.
Real quick, a question from Robert Smith at DemonDeek95. Do you think 8 wins will be enough to keep us from playing in the ACC tournament on Wednesday?
That's a good question.
Do you mean that keep us in the top 9?
That's a hard question to answer, honestly. I think 8 is actually right on the bar. I don't know how it's the first time with 16 teams, so it's kind of difficult, or 15. How many do we have now? 15.
Keep adding teams.
I mean, we're at 4. I mean, hopefully we won't have to deal with that question. 9 would keep us out, and 9 should be really the bare minimum. We have 6 home games left, so hopefully we win. Even if we lose to Duke and Syracuse, hopefully we beat, you know, Clemson, FSU, and the other two. So, I mean, that gets us right there, even excluding all away games. So, 8 would be right on the line. I think 8 would get us maybe the 8 or 9 seed. So, I think 8 would probably keep us out, but 9 would certainly keep us out. 7 would probably – I think 7.5 is the line we have to beat, in my opinion. It's a hard question to answer, though, because I've never seen it.
I agree with you, but no, I thought it was a good question. Just wanted to bring that up. Briefly.
Yes, good. Good. Thanks for him for giving questions as well.
Well, you know, briefly we'll touch on football recruiting, something we don't talk a whole lot about on this podcast because
not football season.
Well, you know, it's not football season. We only know it so much about, but, you know, with Dave Clawson comes improved recruiting from what we've come to find out. And earlier this week, I believe Wednesday, the same night we beat Virginia Tech in that road win, we got a big commit from Rashawn Shaw, linebacker / defensive end out of Fort Pierce, Florida.
Yeah, flip from Louisville.
From Louisville, which is obviously a program on the rise. We saw their head coach just sign up to coach with Texas, so that's quite the program that Louisville's built up. And just today we actually got a defensive tackle commit, Isaiah. He goes by Zeke Rodney out of Rock Hill, South Carolina at South Point High School, a defensive tackle, a big prospect for us. And if you actually go to 247 Sports, which I think is a great recruiting services website for football, they're the 2 highest rated players in our 2014 class, according to 247's scout. So obviously a big, you know, 5 days for the Deeks in regards to football.
Huge. And, you know, you look at Rashawn Shaw, he flipped from Louisville, but, you know, you see they have he had a Bowling Green offer. That means, you know,
Clawson's been looking at him.
I think he's kind of utilizing his, or at least leveraging might be the right word, his program moving up to say, hey, look, I was on you early, now I'm here. You know, maybe you wanted to look at a bigger time program, way bigger than Bowling Green in terms of week in and week out. And these guys had great lists, so I'm pretty excited. It looks like he's doing a great job. He was shown yesterday at halftime, gave a pretty short speech, mainly focusing around the students coming and supporting the team. But, you know, he's excited to be here. He, by all accounts, he's outworking people, working really hard, constantly on the road. He's leveraged the money and the time that he's gotten here, and he's doing really good things for us so far. We're 67th nationally in football recruiting for 2014, and we're 14th in the ACC, but, you know, that's 67th nationally, the big step up from the last few years. So I'm pretty excited about where we're going, and, you know, I've seen not a lot expected next year of Wake, but I think, you know, it could be a transition year, but I think we could surprise some people as well. I think most Wake fans will be pretty pleased with what they see on the product on the field and on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree, and again, going back to the point of if you look at who has committed since his arrival on campus. You look at Zeke Rodney, Rashawn Shaw, and John Wolford, who's a big-time quarterback out of the Jacksonville, Florida area, where Riley Skinner's from originally. And you can say John Wolford was probably going to commit to Wake Forest regardless of Dave Clawson. But Dave Clawson certainly didn't hurt the recruiting process. And those are our three highest-rated recruits that we've gotten this recruiting season. So hats off to Dave Clawson, who was working his butt off by all accounts, and along with the entire coaching staff for that matter. I mean, at some point last week we had guys in Tampa, we had guys in Dallas, we had guys in North Carolina, we had guys in Virginia Beach. I mean, they are all over the place.
And I think just looking at it, I mean, I think John Wolford, quarterback, Isaiah Robinson out of Independence High School in Charlotte, and Jalen Barber, wide receiver out of Monroe High School. I mean, I think those three are pretty much guys you can look at that could contribute right away, and I think they're the future for us. It'll be interesting to see John Wolford versus Tyler Cameron for the starting spot. I think you'd have to, I would give the advantage to John Wolford, not knowing much about it, just saying, youth, it's Clawson's guy. You want to get him in, get him started early. And same with Jalen Barber and Isaiah Robinson. Those were Grove commits, but, we've got a lot of – everybody starts even when you get a new coach in there. So when we get in there after spring ball, it'll be fun to see who enrolls early. I'm not sure if Anibai's coming in, there now.
Jabari Williams and Nick Lutke, a linebacker and a offensive lineman.
And they're here.
Gray shirting.
Every spot's up for grabs, so it's going to be really interesting to see who comes out. I think we could play a lot of young talent this year, and I think those three guys in particular at the skill positions, Wolford, Barber, and Robinson, are going to be really, really big players for us moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and we talked about last year, I believe, 10 or 11 true freshmen played for Grove last season. So I wouldn't be surprised if that trend would continue. I mean, we'll probably see with DeAndre Martin and Sherman Ragland leaving the program, a fair amount of attrition in the program.
I think
room for young guys to step up.
Yeah, I think Tyree Harris is going to be absolutely huge for us next year.
I agree. I think he will be a big-time player for us, and you definitely started to see some of his skill set the last few games of the season. So, Riley, I think, action-packed show here tonight.
Yeah.
Anything else you have to add?
Yeah, just a couple of things. Michael Campanaro had a really good week at the Senior Bowl. He had an interview with your Baltimore Ravens. That'd be fun for you, I guess, if he could play there.
It'd be great for him. He grew up within half hour or so of Baltimore, so it'd be great for his family for sure.
Yeah, I think he returned punts. He was one of the top five guys that improved their stock. I think he was looking at a sixth or seventh round draft pick. Now he could be looking at third or fourth, and even if he goes a little later, there are teams that definitely want him and feel that he's worth one of the top six or seven spots in the draft. And the other is De'Erica Hamby continues to play out of her mind for the Lake Women's basketball
team. Big one over BC today.
Yeah, big comeback win. Yeah, I think we're 11-9 or 12-9 now. 2-5 in the conference. We beat Clemson and Boston College on the road. She had 29-17 against Clemson, and I think
real tough against Carolina the other night. I mean, they pulled ahead late for sure.
Yeah.
But
and then Hamby had 21-15-4 again today. She's probably the third best player in the conference behind Alyssa Thomas of Maryland,
and only a sophomore.
And Diamond DeShield, the freshman at Carolina, is really good. But I mean, we've got two really good classes coming in the next 2 years as well. I think we've got four top 100 recruits, and we're 14th class coming in next year for Wake. So
yeah.
Jen Hoover's got that program on the rise, and I'm excited about what's coming for us, especially since it's a program that's only made one NCAA tournament, and that was in 1989 with Jen Hoover, points and rebound leader for Wake Forest in women's basketball. So
dropping knowledge.
I'm a walking encyclopedia of Wake Forest athletic knowledge.
You really are. You really are. Well, Riley, well, thank you for those extra tidbits for sure, and I hope my Ravens get Campanaro. I'll be the first to get a jersey, and I know you hope your Panthers get Campanaro as well. I mean, I think he'd be a great asset to either of those teams. And
both teams need him.
And pretty much almost any team in the league, for that matter.
You think the Pats and the Broncos are two viable suitors for Cam in terms of the type of player that they like, but they have them. So
I did see an interesting quote from some NFL source that said, just draft him and we'll figure out what to do with him later. And that's pretty much Campanaro. Just put him on the field, he'll make plays.
Yeah, I think Nikita also has a chance at fullback. They're kind of trying to switch him over. So that'll be interesting to watch that development there. And, you know, a guy that, if he doesn't make the NFL, I said he's going to join the Navy SEALs. So best of luck to whatever he decides to do.
You know, either way, he's doing something a lot more than I could probably accomplish in my lifetime. That's for sure.
It's fun to watch those guys come out awake and continue to succeed.
Good guys to root for sure. Well, you know, we know this was an extended version of Roll the Quadcast, but like we said, a big week for Wake Forest sports, both in terms of victories on the basketball court, big basketball games to look forward to this upcoming week, and big-time recruiting news. With that said, thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Go Deeks.
Yep. Go Deeks.